Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. A very warm welcome to Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio, the community's opportunity to learn about the world of accessible and sometimes inaccessible technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. I'm Dave Williams, your host. It's fantastic to be back with you again. And don't forget, of course, technology and Tech Talk. It's all about you, really. We'd love to hear from you, literally. If you'd like to record a voice note or drop us a line, you can send that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week, we will be looking into the trend for artificial intelligence to read our audiobooks. We'll be talking with Paul Hopkins from All Formats and also hearing from Robert Kirkwood, the host of RNIB Connect Radio's Read On program. And of course, we'll be checking in with your listener emails as well. So stay tuned for Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Tasneem Arshad, Callum Stoneman. Good to have you back. Tasneem, what's on your mind this week?
Hi, yes, good to be back. I'm looking forward to Vision Aids releasing their Voxy Vision, which is like a magnifying glass as well as a video magnifier with OCR capabilities. And apparently it's very hot off the press. So really looking forward to learning more and hearing more about this product, which will be with us fairly soon.
Callum Stoneman, what's tickling your fancy?
Hello, I'm currently looking into the news from Twitter. Things seem to be changing every 2 minutes at Twitter, but at the time that we're recording this, they have just announced that they've updated their developer guidelines and said that developers are not allowed to make third-party apps using the Twitter API. So it's bad news for things like Twitterific and Spring and these third-party clients that a lot of people use for accessibility on Twitter. You might have noticed if you do use them regularly, they've stopped working, and that's because Twitter have made some changes that no longer allow them to work. So we'll see how that plays out, but it's not sounding great, unfortunately.
Presumably that also applies to apps like Tween and TW Blue and Chicken Nugget and some of the others that blind and partially sighted people use as well.
Well, in theory, yeah. In theory, it's going to apply to all of them, at least eventually. I think the last I heard, some of them were still working. I think Chicken Nugget was still working. Great name, by the way. But yeah, I think this is going to apply to all of them. So we'll see, and we'll try and keep you posted.
What do you think the reason is, Callum, for them doing that? Because I'm a bit baffled as to their logic here.
Who knows? Who knows? Honestly, maybe to do with the fact that I don't use them, to be honest. I find the native app pretty accessible. But I know many people don't, and I'm sure there's good reasons for that. Maybe it's something to do with the fact that third-party apps can get around serving the ads and the promoted tweets and things like that. But honestly, I'm not too sure.
Okay, well, Callum is our social media guru. You can keep an eye on this for us and let us know how this one develops. Now, we're going to be talking a lot this week about AI narration, artificial intelligence for reading your audiobooks. And if you've not had the chance to hear a sample, well, here's a couple.
Up until I had moved there from the outskirts of Toronto, my life had been confined to paved suburban streets, sidewalks, and the school tarmac. And there was the monthly walk to the Willow Theater on Saturdays.
The trip was great. Leanne forced herself to look into the other woman's eyes. Thanks for asking. Gabby got the unspoken message. No more questions. Leanne had never known her to take offense, which was why she continued to come back to Gabby's clip and curl.
So, Callum, Tasneem, what did you make of those, Taz?
I really liked them, actually, considering they were AI, particularly like the male one. I thought that was less kind, it was more human-like than the female one. But actually, I think I'm probably going to explore that a little bit more and hear more of a longer sample to see if I can tell the difference. But actually, it's quite impressive.
Callum?
Yeah, I agree. I loved the Jackson voice, the male sample. The female one still sounds incredible, a little bit robotic in places, but incredible. I mean, if you were to... If you were to put these side by side with a human narrator and then one of these voices, say you had a bunch of samples and you had to guess which one was the AI, I think that'd be quite a tough job. It's scary how natural these voices are. I'd love that as my voiceover voice. When's that coming?
Agreed, agreed. Maybe we could have a word with Apple.
I don't know. I still use Eloquence, so
Oh.
I'm old school.
What?
I like my robots to sound like robots. And of course, there is a difference between a sample and listening to a whole book. I wonder what that feels like. So yeah, we'd love to hear from you. What do you reckon? AI narration? Yes or no? Or somewhere in between? Do let us know. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Now, clearly, for many of you, as for me, audiobooks are pretty much the background music or the background story to our lives. I've been listening to audiobooks for as long as I can remember, and they're certainly very, very popular in this house. We subscribe to many audiobook services, and rarely is there a moment in the day when there isn't an audiobook playing. However, this whole area is about to undergo a revolution, and joining us to explore what, how, where, and when is Paul Hopkins. And you may recognize Paul from VI Podcasting and other places. Paul's active on social media, and in his professional life, Paul is actually a transcriber, working in productions and sales and advocacy for All Formats, which is run by Queen Alexandra College. Welcome to RNIB Connect Radio, Paul. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for such a welcome. That makes you sound quite impressive. Thank you.
You are impressive. You've done a lot of stuff.
I've been around a while.
He's been around the block. Don't tell anybody. Right. So you're obviously a blind guy like myself, and you enjoy a good audio book. Do you read a lot?
I do, because again, some of the you know me on socials. I commute regularly between London and Birmingham, so Birmingham where I work during the working week, and then a 3.5 hour trip each way once a week. So, return journey to the other side of London, so near Bromley. So yeah, lots of time to listen to audio books and podcasts and all that kind of jazz, really.
You love it to listen to an audio book, but as much as you can, and I appreciate you some of it is sort of confidential, but just as much as you can, tell us what you do for work.
Yeah, so as you said, I produce information in all the formats you'd expect. We do that for major banks, insurance companies, a couple of building societies, there's still some of those left, and water, anything you can think of. And as I always say, when people ask me this question, I hold many secrets, I think it's fair to say. And I'm definitely not one for getting drawn on particular things. And the amount of people that say, "Oh, did you produce so and so for the other day? Because well, I'd just like to know how much such and such." And you just think, "No, don't ask me questions." But no, it's a lovely thing to be able to do. It's very, very varied. Yeah, I've been doing it for since the mid 90s, I think. So yeah, I have a lot of skin in the game, I suppose you would say.
You certainly do. And you recently made a post, I think it was on VI Talk, about a little discovery that you had made.
Okay, so yeah, it was that Apple had started putting out books on their bookstore that were recorded with an AI voice, so an artificial intelligent voice. Obviously, those are known to us, all of us really, that have anything to do with anything from screen readers to reading getting your statements from your bank. I mean, those are recorded with a human sounding speech. So it's essentially text to speech, but with a bit of a rocket up it, I suppose. I don't know. It's kind of on speed a little bit. I don't know. I can't think of a good way to put it. But I was fascinated because I thought, well, that's the kind of thing I do for work. I kind of know how sort of we do things, and again, I can say little bits about that. But to hear this was a little step forward, and that's within the context of hearing, as I said, lots and lots of varieties of text to speech. That Siri, for example, are the better ones, and then obviously the fact that you can use the voice reader, which is actually quite a useful feature on an iPhone. And I know we're talking about iPhones here a little bit, so I'm aware of that. But this is an Apple thing that they've sort of announced, and it was in The Guardian. They heralded it, The Guardian did heralded it as a quiet release from Apple, because I think there was a little bit of a controversy around it from the article I read, which essentially saying that, you know, they wouldn't need to then use narrators so much. And that is a big debate, isn't it?
Just to clarify then, so what we're saying is that some of the books now that are available on Apple's own Apple Books store, obviously many of those books are electronic text, but in the audiobooks section, some of those books are voiced by what is essentially a synthetic, artificially generated, well, artificial intelligent voice, or an AI narrator, as they describe it. And we'll talk about how you might find some samples to kind of get an ear on this yourself in just a second. But I think it's important to explain. You said put it's like a text-to-speech synthesizer with a rocket up it. Let's just be a little bit more specific on that, because many of us are used to listening to these text-to-speech synthesizers all day, every day, right? To the point where you kind of grow almost a little bit weary of it, or you just don't even hear the voice anymore. But the samples that I've heard, they seem to blur the line between what is a human narrator and what is a synthetic voice. You know, they almost exude emotion.
There's a few things that are clever about it. One, and I think they still call it this. I mean, if there's any voice over people listening, by that I mean people that do voice over for a living, as in voicing things, adverts and stuff, you know, that kind of thing. There's a thing called voice fry where, you know, the voice where someone says something at the end is like, oh, I was really stressed. And they've got that little fry bit at the end of their voice. Their voice kind of crackles away a little bit. And it's quite a skill. Some people use it to great effect, and that was one of the first things I noticed about one of the AI narrators. And it's not the sort of thing that you would necessarily think about putting into a voice that you're doing people's statements with, because, you know, like you said, it's not really emotion that people are after, really. They're after that, and in a way the current samples of even reasonably good voiced text-to-speech doesn't have that emotion. It puts the emotion in the wrong place, you know? So it's very hard to get it. So, you know, for example, and again, this comes on to me being able to tell you a little bit about, so we might change the words to make it say something properly. So if ours doesn't recognize a word, we might need to spell it differently so that it says it properly and in a way that's successful. So we're talking about things like emails, town names, some people's names, names that are not traditionally English names, if you want to put it like that. You have to, you know, use various things at your disposal to kind of get the voice to say the right thing. But it there's still a lack of emotion in the right places, apart from the obvious where you put an exclamation mark or a full stop or a comma, where it might pause or rise the voice slightly. If it's a question at the end, you know, that kind of thing. But this was a bit more than that. Like you said, it sounded almost ghostly to me when I first heard it, if I can put it like that.
It's a bit strange, isn't it? Have you read a whole book with it, Paul?
I haven't, but I'm absolutely going to. If I'm being honest, it was finding a book that I really wanted to read. And it's another part of the debate, because the books appear to be kind of similarly priced to that you would get from the Apple store. So let's sort of compare apples with apples, so to speak. And with that in mind, the books that I saw, the audio books, are kind of priced similarly. So from what I could see, having a quick look, so people would automatically think, and some of the comments were on the post that you, the thread that you referred to, was that, you know, the book should be cheaper, really. And of course, the narrators aren't going to be very happy, are they?
Well, they're not. And those of us who've worked as voiceover, I wouldn't describe myself as an artist, but I have done some voiceover work. Is that area perhaps under threat a little bit? Is it going to be automated before you know it?
I think it's too early. It's too early to say, isn't it? I mean, I think that I hope, because the one thing I was going to say that's in a disadvantage for it at the moment, I couldn't find very much definition between when the voice was doing different characters so far. So, you know, you might have sort of the narrator might be saying something like, well, you know, Bill came over to so-and-so and started to discuss I don't know, the weather. And then Bill, all right, mate, yeah, the weather's not been so good, has it? And then, you know, and then Bill's wife comes in and says, oh, no, it's absolutely disgusting. And, you know, you're not getting...
She's quite posh, Bill's wife, isn't she?
She is a bit, yeah. Yeah. And there is a skill, undoubtedly, narrators. And I think recording audiobooks, a lot of voiceover artists would say that they are the really difficult thing to do, because, you know, you could do an advert, you know, oh, buy this and get it free, and, you know, you get all that, and it's a great 30-second job, isn't it? But if you've got to sustain sort of a number of characters in a book over sort of 12 or 13 hours in some cases, you know, that is a skill, and I don't know if I want AI to do that. So that's the question, isn't it? Will it be popular enough that so many people will latch on and say, yeah, this is amazing? Or will they be like us, where we're sort of curious, and yes, it's ghost-like and all the rest of it, and there's some kind of weird fascination with it, almost like a sort of, what is this? Is that going to sustain us?
I'm going to check in with the RNIB library team, because I'm sure they will be interested in this. Thank you so much for bringing it to our attention. So how do people go and have a little listen to this AI narration?
I think, from memory, if you put in AI narration or AI narrated audiobooks in the search, it definitely, the AI bit is triggering a search that would come up with them, and I think then you can review them, so you don't have to buy a book straight away. You can go into each book and just say, oh, I fancy having a listen to that. And there are a couple of female voices I heard, as well as male voices, and there seems to be a reasonable selection. It went to a few pages, so there are a number of books to sort of choose at the moment. But I would first go and just review, have a little review of the book, in the same way that you can with the likes of Audible, where you can view a listen to a sample of the book. Do that first, and let Connect Radio know what you think, you know?
Indeed. Paul Hopkins from All Formats, thanks very much.
No worries.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
It's time now for another episode of Tech Bites from RNIB's Torsten Bloom.
Welcome to today's JAWS feature, which will explain the JAWS help system to you. Before we start with this, there is something very important to know. All the information that JAWS gives to you when using the JAWS help system are shown in the virtual viewer. That means that it is text you can navigate through by using cursor up and cursor down keys. If you want to leave the virtual viewer, you have to press escape, and then you are back in the app where you started the help system from. In my case, I'm using now Microsoft Word to show the help system to you. So every description that you get now in the virtual viewer may be different when using another app. Let's start at first with the Windows shortcut key help, or I would say with the application shortcut key help. For this, I'm pressing now the key combination JAWS key and W. The JAWS key is the insert key if you're using a normal PC keyboard, and if you have no insert key and if the laptop layout is set up for you, you have to use the caps lock key instead.
To activate quick search in Office applications, press Alt plus Q. The following MS Word shortcut keys may be useful. Create a new document, Control plus N. Open an existing document, Control plus O. Save a document, Control plus S. Print a document, Control plus P. Undo the last edit, Command Control plus Z. Repeat the last edit, Command Control plus Y.
Now I've pressed the Control button to stop JAWS from reading, and now I can navigate through the text in the virtual viewer using cursor keys up and down. But you can do it on your own, so I press now, for me, the escape key to go back into my Word document where I started the help system from.
Escape. This is a little test to show the JAWS help system to our audience.
This is now the text that is written in the Word document, and JAWS is repeating the line where my cursor is focused. Since we can tap through different venues of help, a second option would be the JAWS hotkey help. You can use this by pressing the JAWS key and the letter H.
Link set quick settings JAWS key plus V. Link say the current field control plus JAWS key plus numpad 5. Link say the line and column of the caret JAWS key plus delete. Link toggle the writing mode from insert to over type alt plus control plus I. Lin.
As you did here now, every keystroke is a link. That means you can navigate in the virtual viewer through the links, and if you want to press this keystroke and you don't want to remember that, you can press the enter key on the link and the keystroke is pressed automatically. I'm going now, for example, to the following link.
Link say the version of MS Word being used, control plus JAWS key plus V.
Okay, I don't want to remember JAWS key, control and V, so I press enter on this link and JAWS is telling me the following.
Enter Microsoft Word subscription version 16.0.14326.20776.
And also here I have to press escape to close the virtual viewer.
Escape. This is a little test to show the JAWS help system to our audience.
If I need specific information about an item or control where I'm focused on, I can use the third option of the JAWS help system, which is pressing JAWS key and F1.
This is a document window. This is the text area of an open document. The document has one section, left paren s right paren. The cursor is in section 1. Page footer colon 0. Margins for this section are set as follows: colon left 2.54 centimeters, right 2.54 centimeters, top 2.54 centimeters, bottom 2.54 centimeters, centimeters.
These are specific information about my actual Word document where I'm in. This information is also in the virtual viewer, so I have to press escape if I want to leave this help system.
Escape. This is a little test to show the JAWS help system to our audience.
Last but not least, we come to the JAWS help topic section. This section doesn't use the virtual viewer. It works in a totally other way. To go to the JAWS topic for the specific app we are in, for example now in Microsoft Word, you have to press twice the combination JAWS key and F1. The best would be if you keep the JAWS key pressed and press twice the F1 key.
Once you pick a topic and press enter on it, use the F6 key to move to and read the information window. Popular applications, contents page, tree view, topic word, 8 of 8. To move through or expand items, use the arrow keys.
Now JAWS has told us that we are automatically focused on the topic for Microsoft Word. If you want to visit this topic and explore the help, we have to press once F6.
F6. Page has one heading and 7 links. Microsoft Word heading level 1. Microsoft Word. Microsoft Word is a word processing application that gives you the ability to create professional quality documents that you can share and print, e-mail, and place on the web. Please visit www.microsoft.com for more information on Microsoft Word.
These are now general information about Microsoft Word. If you would go more down in this content, you will also find links to the JAWS help section, for example, for JAWS shortcut keys, and also links to application shortcut keys. You can also find here tips and tricks how to use Word the best with JAWS. This help system, it's an own window, so you haven't to press escape to leave it, you have to press Alt F4. If you want to explore the topic section a little bit more, you can press also F6 to go back to the topic section. And then you can navigate with cursor up and cursor down through the different topics. If you want to explore the content a little bit more of a specific topic, you press, when focused on the topic, Enter, and afterwards F6.
Thanks to Torsten Bloom, and we'll have another episode of JAWS Tech Bytes soon.
Returning now to our theme this week, that of artificial intelligence reading audiobooks. And we are joined by Robert Kirkwood from Read On and our very own Callum Stoneman. We are, of course, talking about AI narration. Callum, can you just help us understand what is AI narration and how does it work?
It's kind of like a TTS or a text-to-speech. So the sort of thing that we have on our screen readers. And by that, I mean, it's a computer-generated voice. But in this case, what they have done is they've created a computer-generated voice based on a human's voice, which so that makes it sound very natural and very, or hopefully at least, very pleasant to listen to. And then it's using artificial intelligence to, I guess, bring in even more of that natural sound. So to bring in intonation and to bring in expression. So essentially, it's a very, very good, high quality, computer-generated voice reading audiobooks is the best kind of summary I could give of it.
Right, but what is the difference between the voice that you might hear from your screen reader or your smart speaker compared with one of these AI narrators?
I guess the difference is probably the clarity of the voice and how high quality it is. I mean, I think we all know that even the so-called natural voices that we can get on our screen readers and the voices of, for example, you know, the Alexa service, they are pretty natural sounding, but the way they phrase certain words, the way they pronounce certain words, the way they change the pitch of the voice based on the punctuation and things like that are still quite robotic. A full book. The idea with these voices is that they've tried to make them so natural sounding that you probably could put up with it for a full 12-hour book, if not more.
And why do you think it is, Callum, you're a tech guy, why do you think it is that we're starting to hear about this now?
I think it's because of the improvements in what we can do with these computer-generated voices. I mean, and there's a cost-saving element to it as well. You know, it's not cheap for human narrators to come in and read these audiobooks. You know, they've got to be paid for their time. They've got to have a script. They've got to do a lot of editing, a lot of post-production. Whereas I guess these kind of books are cheaper to produce because you're not relying on a human. And if they can do it in a way that's still easy to listen to and you can still get the context of the book, then it's a good cost saving, and it allows for more books to be produced as well. You know, it gives them an easier way to produce audiobooks because if they've not got all that overhead behind them.
Robert, as host of Read On here on RNIB Connect Radio, you're clearly very close to the audiobook industry. Who do you think are the winners and losers with this? I know you've got some misgivings.
I do. I'll actually tell you a little bit about my background first and how lucky I was with the timing of it. So I graduated and immediately went into an audiobook company in 2000 who had just gone digital. The finished product went out on cassette tape, but a year later I moved to RNIB Talking Books just as they were going digital as well. And the revolution they had then kind of feels like the revolution we're having now. I like narrators, but I didn't think the voices were going to be good until I listened to some of them. And I don't think we're there yet, but we're very, very close to a point where you can't differentiate between a book narrated by a human or a book narrated by an AI. So yeah, the narrators could lose out here, but I do know some narrators, some famous ones as well, who have licensed their voice, so they're still getting paid for it, but a computer is doing the actual reading for them. They have basically sold their voice. I know James Earl Jones, the voice of Darth Vader, has done that. He's licensed his voice, so there are ways around that, but yeah, I do have misgivings about it. Can text-to-speech really replace a human?
But it's more than that, though, Robert, isn't it? More than text-to-speech, because, of course, Johnny Briggs licensed his voice to, you know, what we now know as the Daniel voice that we get on many speaking devices. So the Nuance Daniel voice is the guy from The Weakest Link, if you remember the TV show. You know, the Callum was the strongest link in the last round, but will the team have noticed? It's the same guy, and he licensed his voice to be used as a text-to-speech synthesizer. But with AI narration, there's something else going on, isn't there?
Yes, I've listened to quite a bit in preparation for this and before, and I've listened to something that I didn't realise was narrated by AI for Read On. I think you can tell, I really do think you can tell after a few minutes, and once it's in your head that it's an AI, you notice it more, and it took me out of the book slightly.
Do you think that's going to be a problem going forward, or do you think that's just an adjustment and that's something that we'll get over?
No, that's what I'm saying. We're not there yet, but we're very close. I think that's a kink that's going to be ironed out. I mean, there's always been problems when you're doing an audiobook on pronunciation. I've had books that were, you know, set in the Highlands of Scotland, so I've had to phone up various tourist information boards and say, I wonder if you can help me. I have a list of words here of locales near you. Can you tell me how to say them? I'm going to record this call. And I've just went through, I've spelled out the word. They've told me how to pronounce it. I've given that to the narrator. These are problems that human narrators have. I think AI narrators will always have that. But if there's a final check, or if I wouldn't know how to do it. I wouldn't know how to, you know, if somebody said Achinleck instead of Auchinleck, or Glasgow instead of Glasgow, you know, I wouldn't know how they could change that.
I live in Worcester, so I know exactly what you're saying. But, you know, the interesting thing about this, though, is it's not clear cut, is it? Because a bad human narrator can really destroy the experience of an audiobook.
Oh, certainly, yeah. And we've had some bad casting choices in an IB Talking Book Celebrity before. Yes.
Very diplomatically put there, Robert.
And especially in commercial audiobooks, you know, if, like, let's say footballers aren't the best people to read their own biographies.
Do you think, though, I mean, you mentioned biographies there and autobiographies, and of course we think about literary fiction. Do you think there are certain types of content that maybe lend themselves quite well to AI narration?
Yes, and the other side of that, there's stuff that really doesn't. You know, like an autobiography read by the person who wrote it, that should be the person to read it. But a non-fiction textbook, especially a non-fiction textbook that would normally not be considered to have an audio version, because of the whole accessibility side of this as well, I think non-fiction lends itself to the artificial voice. Tech books in particular are actually ideal for an AI voice. But, yeah, you know, I like narrators. You can't beat the human voice at the moment. But with my working for RNIB and Read On and accessibility hat on, most books aren't available in audio, especially small print runs or, as I say, textbooks that have got a very limited field of people who are going to buy them.
And do you think there are other applications for AI narration outside of audiobooks?
Absolutely, because I used to work in transcription, which was my first job when I moved from RMIB Talking Books to the Scottish studios up in Glasgow. And my first job in Scotland was reading the instructions for a medicine that you had to put up your guide dog's bum. So things like that. You know, transcription is everything that's printed except a book. So we would read Scottish power bills, we would read, as I say, medicine instructions, we would read letters, again, books that had a very limited run, especially self-published books. If someone requested that and had the amount of, you know, pages on their allowance, we could read them a book. Things like that. It's ideal for, especially things like power bills or things like that. If someone who can't access print had a phone number that they could phone up and their bill would be read out to them by an AI, that's an absolutely perfect way to use this technology.
Right. And do you think there are any circumstances where an artificially generated narrator replaces a human and might in some cases actually be the better choice?
Well, as I say, for non-fiction and particularly tech books, yeah, they would be absolutely perfect for it. But for complicated fiction book or an autobiography, it should be a human.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, the Stephen Fry read of Harry Potter, you know, doing the accents and the, you know, sort of making sound effects with your mouth and things like that, you know. Only a human can really pull that off. It's a performance, surely.
Oh, definitely. It's acting. I recently spoke to Rebecca Lachance, who's only just started reading audiobooks, and she's a stage performer. She's used to being up on stage and using the whole area, and she's got to direct that performance down the microphone. But she says she's as animated in the booth as she would be on stage. You know, she's moving around silently, obviously. Facial expressions are changing. She's living the book as she's reading it to give that better vocal performance. I spoke to narrator and actor Martin Jarvis, and he will take, you know, instead of if the line says, "Oh, I didn't know you were here," he said nervously, he would just say, "Oh, I didn't know you were here," you know, and say it would act the extra parts which an AI voice couldn't do.
Or maybe not yet.
Probably not yet. I mean, yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, the Harry Potter books, because that's the first thing that I thought of when I heard this story, because that's my absolute favourite set of audiobooks. That reading of Harry Potter by Stephen Fry is just incredible. You know, the voices, the accents. I think that's better acted than the film in some places. And yeah, an AI, I kind of wonder if it ever could do that. The tech guy in me really wants to think that it could. But I think it's scary how good these voices are. And I think I will be proved wrong in saying this, but I'm sceptical of whether an AI can really get different voices, different accents, different styles. You know, for example, if a sentence is said, you could say a sentence like, you know, "I think this is fantastic," but are you saying it excitedly or sarcastically? You know, and that really changes the context of that simple, you know, sentence.
Do either of you have any sense of the production techniques involved? Because, you know, I was speaking with someone else recently about this, and I think at the moment it's not just as simple as throwing some text at an engine and seeing what comes out. You know, there's a little bit of markup goes on, and of course you've got to get a really high quality sample of a professional human narrator, well recorded. It's still not completely automated, right?
There was one I looked at earlier today whereby you sent them the PDF of your book, clicked on the voice you wanted, and you get your book within 10 minutes. I think that's at the lower end of the market, but I think it can be as simple as giving it the text and clicking and downloading the book, yeah.
But presumably that'll depend on how well formatted your text is, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, GIGO is the old acronym in computing circles, garbage in, garbage out, you know, and we're all advocating for, you know, structured content and things to be labelled properly. And, of course, if the source material isn't, you know, and it'd be very interesting to see what happens with technical content as well. You know, if you had to describe a graph or an image that's in a book, because narrators sometimes do that, don't they, that you can be listening to a book and they might say, "Well, then there's a picture here of, you know," and then they'll describe the picture.
Yeah, it can be, especially with footnotes as well, it can be, you know, decisions made on the fly. Do you put the footnote in where the mark is, or do you wait to the end of the sentence? Do you just add it to the text? Yeah, there are a lot of things a narrator will do that AI won't. And then again, there are a lot of things an AI won't do, like it won't have a rumbly stomach. It won't come in for a second day of a book and have a cold. it won't make a mistake and swear for 5 minutes, you know.
So, those things are usually edited out, but yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I mean, in the samples we've listened to, there just seems to me to be an absence of breathing as well. That was very noticeable, I thought.
Yeah, and I was glad of that as well, because I don't know about you, but the breathing in the Alex voice that you can get on the Apple products, I just find that creepy. I could not listen to a book being read by that. But no, the sample, I mean, the Jackson voice that we've got a sample of, I think I've never tried listening to a full book with these, which I guess is the real test, but listening to the sample of that voice, I probably could.
Right, chaps, well we'll wrap this up then. What's the best way to kind of keep across all of this if someone's interested in learning more about AI narration? Callum, what do you suggest would be the best way to keep an ear on what's going on?
So if you want to hear the samples that are available, or even hear the books that are available in this format, if you go into Apple Books, if you've got an iOS device or a Mac, you can go to the Apple Books app and do a search for AI narration. All the books that are narrated by these AI voices should come up. And I guess for general news on this, I mean, we'll try and keep across it at Tech Talk.
We certainly will, yeah. And Robert Kirkwood, when can we hear Read On? I imagine AI narrated books are going to rear their head over there at some stage.
Yes, and I think we'll use some of this in Read On to start a discussion. I've got a quote, actually, from blind author Gordon Anthony. He says, "I'm conflicted about Apple's use of AI voices to read audiobooks. Being blind, I want access to more books, but I also don't want human narrators to become redundant. I fear these desires are mutually incompatible," which are my thoughts exactly. I really like narrators. I don't want them to be out of work, and I don't think for many books they can be replaced, but we'll certainly keep a close ear on this on Read On.
Indeed, yeah, and we'll be listening with great interest. Spontaneity, isn't it? That's the thing that a human narrator perhaps brings to the table. They have a moment of inspiration, you know, the ability to do something really creative. And can a machine really do that? So we will listen with much interest, both to the samples and to Read On. When are you on, Robert, in case anyone doesn't know?
Read On is on Fridays at 1 p.m. It's repeated at the weekend, and we're always available as a podcast. The best place, I think, is Podlink. If you go to podlink.com/rotas, R-O-T-E-S, that's Read On, the audiobook show. But pod.link/rotas.
Robert Kirkwood, Callum Stoneman, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Andrew McKay has been in touch. This is for you, Callum. It's all about the Ring doorbell again. So Andrew McKay says, since the Ring doorbell camera is battery powered, could you use the camera from the Ring doorbell as a security camera? And would it be possible to use multiple cameras in a single system? Well, our resident Ring doorbell guru, Callum Stoneman, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I seem to have become the Ring expert around here, don't I? Yeah, you could do. You could use it as just a camera and essentially ignore the button, as you say in your email there, Andrew. You can use multiple doorbells in one system as well, yeah. I guess the only thing you'd have to be careful of is just whether your Wi-Fi signal is strong enough and whether your internet bandwidth could handle it. You know, if they're both recording at the same time, then you just want to make sure your upload speed that the cameras are getting is fast enough. You're probably looking at, you want to try and have them getting about 5-6 megabits upload, which most decent modern, you know, connections should provide. But as long as your internet can handle it, then yeah, absolutely fine.
And would the Ring doorbell, is there a motion sensor there? So would you get footage for when motion is detected?
Yeah, absolutely. So it would notify you when there's motion. You can have different notifications for motion compared to people. So, you know, if there's motion, as in just a cat wanders into your garden or a car drives past, that could be handled differently and have a different notification to if there's a person walking up your driveway or in your back garden or wherever you've got the camera. There are other cameras that Ring do, like, you know, the stick-up cam, for example, which is kind of a better option as a dedicated security camera. I think that just gives you more of a wider area, I think. I mean, you're asking the wrong person about the visuals, for obvious reasons, but I think it just gives you more detail in the video. It covers more of the area, you know, covers more of your garden than the doorbell would. But yeah, if you wanted to just stick with the doorbell, it would work using it as a camera.
Andrew, thanks so much for your email. And if anyone's using technology to stay safe, let us know what you do, how you do it. The usual address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum, thanks a lot.
Now we're going to talk to Madeline Bloom from RNIB's Technology for Life team.
Now, we've talked before on the programme about how touchscreens don't work for everyone, and some blind and partially sighted people still prefer to use push buttons. But when you use buttons, do you compromise the features that are available from you? Do you miss out? Do you lose out? Well, somebody who has a view on this and some information to share from our Technology for Life team, it's Madeline Bloom. Welcome back to Tech Talk, Madeline.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Brilliant. Yeah, good to have you with us. Now, you have been at Sight Village Southeast, an exhibition of products and services designed for blind and partially sighted people, not just technology, of course, but all sorts of things. And you have been exploring push-button smartphones. Do you want to tell us a bit more?
Among so many things I wanted to see, yes, push-button smartphones. There was one phone that Sight and Sound has on offer, and that's the Smart Vision 3. You might know the Mini Vision or the Smart Vision 2 that have been there for a little while now. This is the Smart Vision 3. It's a lovely phone to try out if you are in the market for one of those, because it has three ways for you to actually use your keyboard. You can either use the touchscreen, or you can use the keyboard, the buttons on the phone, or you can actually enter your text by voice, so use voice recognition.
Right, okay, so quite a sophisticated device.
It is. I mean, it doesn't look like it. When you feel it, you think, oh yeah, it's a normal push button phone, and then you actually start to play with it and you explore. I read up about it before, so I knew it has a touch screen. So it combines, if you start using a phone like this, you're probably quite scared to use the phone, you want to use the buttons, but as you go along, you actually think, oh, you know, using the touch screen is so much easier. So you use a bit of a touch screen, and if you need to type a lot, you need to use some buttons, that's fine too. I think it's a good combination to use whatever you have to use in different applications. And what I think is fantastic here, you can have the standard applications that you like or that your family might talk to you about, like WhatsApp or Skype, TeamViewer, things like that, to support one another on the Smart Vision 3 as well.
How does that compare with something like the Blind Shell Classic 2, which is, I know, garnered quite a bit of attention recently?
Yeah, I mean, the Blind Shell Classic 2 is similar, very similar, but doesn't have a touch screen. So, and it's a bit cheaper than the Smart Vision 3, because that comes in at a $499 price tag, up to $699, depending on some add-ons that you can choose to get, things like GPS navigation. And the Blind Shell is a bit cheaper, I think £330 to £350 sort of pounds, depending what sort of offer might be going on there. But I think I'm all for choice. And it's good to have choices here and there. You know, if you don't want to use a smartphone and you want to use a push-button phone, at least you can choose of two phones.
Do you think the Smart Vision 3 is a kind of a gateway product, perhaps for someone who is taking their first steps toward using a touchscreen, perhaps? So you've got the reassurance of the buttons, but then the touchscreen there as well, should you choose to use it?
Yeah, I definitely think that's exactly what it is. I speak to so many people that don't have a phone because they don't want to get a smartphone. They think that would be too much for them, and they have nothing. But that's also quite insecure, because if they go out on their own, you know, they can't let anyone know what they're doing. Or I think it's just funny these days. You want to go out, you want to have a phone, really. So I think it's a good phone if you feel that way inclined to have a phone with buttons. It's a perfect phone to buy.
Now, £499, that's still quite a lot of money, isn't it, Madeline? You know, for anyone, particularly at the moment, as we're, you know, all experiencing the pressures of the cost of living crisis. I mean, how would you justify that kind of investment for someone?
I try to talk to you about our grants that we offer from RNIB Technology for Life. So if it's something you think you are eligible to apply for, then please do talk to us about that, because we do understand it's a lot of money to pay. Sight and Sound offers you some monthly payment scheme as well that you could use. I think it's about £49 a month for, you know, 12 months. But it's something you should always discuss, because it's a lot of money to spend in one go. So, yeah, totally understand.
It is. And, you know, I think about, you know, the cost of taxis. They've just gone up where I live. And I think about the personal independence payments. You know, make sure that you're receiving the benefits that you're entitled to. RNIB has a benefits advice service as well. And, you know, personal independence payments, you know, for me, I do use some of mine on technology that enables me to be more independent. And that might be travel, but it might be something like this device, a smartphone or other piece of technology, maybe a piece of software. So when we were talking just before this, you were saying how wonderful it was to be back out at an event and people saying, oh, you sound very different in person than on Teams and all of that. Any other highlights, memorable moments from Sight Village?
Yeah, I've got two more to share with you. The first one, so I've been advising quite a lot about Braille note takers, and again, this was one of those moments where I could actually put or get my hands on the Mantis Q and other little Braille note takers, HumanWare, Sight and Sound, you know, they do quite a few. The Mantis Q is a HumanWare product, and is it or is it not? Give me a second.
You are right, it is a HumanWare product. Our very own co-host, Callum Stoneman, actually, it was his product of the year for 2022. Even though it's been around for a little while, he really loves his Mantis because it's a... Go on, you describe it for everyone.
It's been around for a while. I like that it has a QWERTY keyboard. You can get it with a Braille keyboard as well.
Can you? Okay.
I like that it has a QWERTY keyboard. And for me, I'm just so used to QWERTY keyboards that I would always choose that, and it's quite easy to type on it as well, and it's easy to carry it away with you. So it has a quite good battery capacity. It lasts for your day when you go out. So yeah, no, I can definitely understand why Callum chooses that to be 2022 winner of the year product, definitely.
So for me, the thing that impressed me about the Mantis, obviously you've got the proximity of the Braille display from the keyboard, so less distance to move your hand, making it a little bit more ergonomic. But also for a 40-cell Braille display and, you know, a laptop-style keyboard, it's surprisingly lightweight as well. Slips really well into your laptop bag and not too heavy to carry around. What was your other moment, Madeline?
My other moment has nothing to do with technology at all, but it was great. And I'm going to mention it. I played Showdown. Have you ever played Showdown, Dave?
You know, I think I have had a go just the once. Why don't you describe it for everyone? It is quite fun.
It is. So it comes, well, it's been played everywhere, really. And I know it was quite famous in Germany, where I'm from. And here there were we inside Village, and there was a Showdown room downstairs, and we could actually try it out for a while. It's a bit like table tennis, I would say, but not really, because you wear blindfold glasses with the person you play with. You wear a glove in your right hand and a bat, and you have a ball, and the ball sort of needs to reach the other person. There are a lot of rules involving this game, and I don't want to go into them because I always played it wrong in the little time that I had to play it. But the aim is to get the ball into the goal of the other person on the other side. And it's all quite, you know, it makes a noise, the ball makes a noise, it's a loud game, but it's fun. So it's not technology, but, you know, again, it's a perfect thing. I just felt really included. And I really enjoyed playing this, and it was amazing.
Yeah, it's a little bit like air hockey, I think, as well. It reminds me, you know, the idea that it's a two-player table game, and you know, the objective is to get you know, the in this case, the ball in the other player's goal. And I think it's going to feature at the IBSA World Games, the International Blind Sports Association Games, which are taking place in Birmingham later in 2023, at the end of August. So we look forward to that. Well, Madeline, lovely to hear from you as always. Let us know what folk are calling in about Technology for Life. And if people have questions about technology, need a little bit of support, what's the best way to contact you?
Yes, please, if you need anything, any discussion about technology, it doesn't have to be technology, access technology only, anything Windows 11 related or whatever, just give us a call. We are always here to speak with you on 0303 123 9999 and ask for Technology for Life, or you can send us an email at tfl@rnib.org.uk.
Madeline Bloom from RNIB's Technology for Life team, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it from Tech Talk this time. Fascinating conversation today about AI narration, and we'd love to hear what you think. Send us a voice note or email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tasneem Marshad, thank you very much.
Thank you, and see you all next week.
And cheers, Callum.
Cheers. See you next week.
And from myself, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, bye for now.